Welcome to the Golf Industry Uncut. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Exclusively on THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. Now, here's your host, JB.
Welcome, everybody, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut. For those that are new to the show, each episode of Uncut will feature one of the great insiders from the industry, and they'll be placed in the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. This week, we welcome Josh Talge to the show. For those that do not know him, he's the VP of Marketing for Titleist Golf Clubs. For those listening on social media, how can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at JTalge. J as in Josh, T as in Tom, A-L-G-E.
Are you ready to step into the hot seat?
Let's do it. I'm excited. We got two Joshes on a podcast. You don't normally get that.
Yeah, that's a little new for our listeners, I'm sure. I think they'll be able to figure out who's who. But, you know, if they can't, you're the one that's far more enjoyable to be around, so I've been told.
I'm not sure if it's a low bar or not, but I appreciate the compliment.
How did you get into the golf industry and to now your position at Titleist?
I've had a pretty fun run getting kind of working through different places in marketing. So I grew up in northern Minnesota. I'm a fierce Minnesotan, as I like to say, and went to school. I have an undergrad degree in international business. Spent some time working for John Deere, the largest John Deere dealership network in the world. So if you need any help marketing combines or bulldozers, I'm your guy. And then I went back to business school and spent some time at Notre Dame, got my MBA there. And then went to Procter & Gamble, which is kind of the home of brand management. And I was fortunate to work on a lot of really exciting brands there and lead some fun projects, everything from Folgers Coffee. I worked on the women's shaving business for Gillette, which is Venus Razors. And then the last role I had at P&G was leading the Old Spice brand. And that was a lot of fun. We did a lot of crazy, fun stuff. Certainly things that I'm sure some of your listeners will remember. We did a lot of shirtless black guys in our stuff, and really kind of made a name for ourselves of what could we do to push that envelope a little bit. And from there, that actually took me into the golf space. And at the time, TaylorMade was just getting ready to launch Rocket Balls, and they were looking at what are some of the things we could do that would really make things pop from break through kind of the classic noise, if you will, in the golf space. And what could we do that was a little bit different? And they liked some of the things that were going on Old Spice, and they wanted to push a little bit on that. And so that was my transition into the golf space. I was with TaylorMade for a few years, and then spent a little bit of time heading up the marketing group for an audio company, and then was fortunate enough to find my way back into golf and a really great place here with Titleist.
Let's talk about golf clubs and marketing, because you've been on a different parallel at both companies. What do you think is the best way to reach golfers about your message? Is it a traditional way, from years past through print magazines and demo days, or are there new areas popping up that jump out to you?
Well, I think the key is you've got to understand who is your audience, and we're pretty narrow focused. When we talk about Titleist golf clubs, we're looking for a certain player. We're looking for guys who really care about not only the game of golf, but their particular game. They're thinking about, I want to make sure I want to get better. I want to be practicing a little bit. I'm open to taking lessons. I believe in the power of fitting. I believe that equipment can help make me better. And so when we start to kind of look at who are those guys, that naturally tends us to take us into a place where we want to be a little bit more targeted. For us, it's not as effective to run, 30-second TV ads like, on the Super Bowl or an NFL TV. That's never going to be something for us, because it's going to be too wide of a net. We've got a pretty narrow target, and we want to be able to find them through spaces like what we're doing today. We know that your listeners are exactly our kind of guy. They're the guys who are always thinking about equipment. They want the latest news. They want to tweak things. They want to go see what's different and understand what can work best for my game. And so we've put a real focus in this space to make sure that we can connect with golfers. And then you mentioned demo days. And demo days, I think, are still highly effective as long as the focus is on making sure you're interacting with the golfer. The classic demo day of just, hey, here's a whole bunch of companies and they've got tents up and you can just walk up and buy a club and swing it, I don't know if that's terribly effective, because you're not really getting anything unique and different there. But if you can set up an appointment with a trained fitter and have him really look at your golf swing and use tools, you know, like from a launch monitor perspective, to really hone your game in and be able to fit you into equipment that will absolutely make you a better golfer, that's a relationship I get pretty excited about, and that's what we want to make sure we're able to do.
And that makes a lot of sense. Plus, with most golfers not getting fit still, which is just a travesty, the equipment's always going to shine in that light, especially with the different equipment that the different brands have now. You guys specifically with the 917 line that does a lot of different things to make sure people can get dialed in. Now, my next question, I'm going to take the listeners on a little bit of a journey, and you're going to have to complete it, because as a golfer and someone that works for a golf manufacturer, I know that everybody still gets excited the day the equipment comes in. You've been talking about it, the marketing and everything else. Can you describe to our listeners, and I've never asked anybody else this on the show, the first day the boxes come into your office and you get to see the equipment you've been planning for?
Oh, man, it's better than Christmas. I'll say that. And hopefully my wife's not listening right now because she would be disappointed. But it's the most exciting day when we start to see first articles of equipment come in that we can start to test. It's one thing to look at molds and at models. It's another thing when you're able to shaft up the equipment and actually go out there and hit it, because then it starts to feel real. And when it starts to feel real, that's when you know immediately if you've got something exciting or not. And that is just such a fun time to be able to open those boxes, start to look at the equipment, get it shafted up, and go out. And we're fortunate we've got the Titleist Performance Institute just down the street from us, and we're able to go out there and really put product through its paces starting on that day one when we get new equipment. And you get to really see how well does it perform. And so there's really nothing else like it in our space. That's definitely probably the most exciting day. And it's always exciting once we launch to the you know, retail world and consumers can get it. That's always kind of a fun day because then they get to see everything and they get we get broader feedback. But the first day when we get our first sneak peek at things is it's the best.
And for those listeners who haven't seen our THPTV original series spot, we have a behind-the-scenes tour of the Performance Institute that Josh was just discussing. It's about 15 minutes long, and it takes you through every single area of the facility in detail with their head fitter, head of club fitting, Brett Porath. And it's a really fascinating look. So I urge you to go over to the Hacker's Paradise, our mobile app, or our YouTube channel and check that out. Now, before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact on Twitter at THPGolf. And if you include the hashtag THPRadio, we can include future questions on the show with Josh if we don't scare him away. This is going
to
be...
I'm happy to come back.
This is going to be an interesting question for you. You are a club guy and a marketing guy. And we've had this conversation before in person, and I thought it would be a really good dynamic to share with the listeners because you explain it better than almost anybody I've ever had on. You've been with a company that believed at the time of multiple release per year, quick hitting, stay in the news, and now you're on the other side, which is a slower release cycle. Now, I'm not saying either is right or wrong, because I personally don't believe that there is a right or wrong here. But how do you prepare from a marketing person to the different challenges and differences that you face when sharing the information about the clubs, and how do you keep them fresh for 2 years?
Well, both of those challenges are very unique. You know, whether it's a rapid release cycle or a more planned or considered release cycle. I'll comment on where we're at with Titleist and the reason why we have what has now become almost a bank on it, kind of 2 year product life cycle where people plan around that. And the reason we have that is it enables us to have our R&D team to have different groups working far out into the future. We have an advanced research team that is looking at new types of engineering, new types of processes, as well as types of elements that can really impact what we're able to do with clubs. And that could be as far down as 10 years away from now. So we've got a group looking that far out into the future. And then we've got teams closer in saying, okay, what can we do to push the envelope now to really impact the golfer? Because our belief here is that we want to make sure every time we bring a new club to market, it's the best product we've ever made. And that's a promise we want to make and keep to the golfer. We don't want them to feel like, oh, hey, here's a new version of AP1s, or here's the latest driver from Titleist. And yeah, it's nice, but I don't know if it's really that much better than the old one. That's never going to be an issue with us, because our focus is that it's got to be demonstrably better or we won't bring it to market. And that allows us to be able to kind of set up that direction with our team, so we are pushing the barrier where we can from a product development side. And then from a marketing side, the challenge really comes in on how do we make sure that we bring to life brilliantly simple stories for those products, and first get you really excited that they're coming to market, and then remind you that these are still the best performing products even after they've been in the market for a year. And that's sometimes a challenge in certain categories. Certainly around, I think drivers is probably the most challenging one, because golfers have kind of bought into this idea that new is better, or that new is top of mind, because people will be kind of, you know, screaming from the rooftops about, hey, this is the new one, it's the new one, it's got this, or it does this, or it's this color, or whatever it might be. And you want to make sure that we're really considered through that of just, all right, guys, yes, this product is, you know, has been in the marketplace for this many months, but it's still the best performing product. If we put this in your hands, you're going to get great results. And so it puts a little bit more of an onus on us to make sure that we are focused on talking about the total performance of our product and how, as a golfer, you can get the best of it.
We'll segue into the 917 line of Metalwoods, because that's a perfect example of this. And it's been heavily talked about both on our forums and social media and every place else. And it's done well for you, partly because of the release time and everything else. But what key piece of marketing or technology from that line made it the most interesting to consumers? And how did you apply that message?
Well, at first, what we did was we wanted to really tell people it was the standard for complete performance, because it does everything really, really well. Not only is it incredibly long and that it looks great and that it has that Titleist sound and feel, which is really key to a lot of players, but it is fully adjustable. And we can make sure that we turn this into the best golf club for your swing. And I'm fond of saying that golf swings are like snowflakes. No two are the same. And we can really adjust this club to get the best out of you and the best for your game. So we have all that, and then as we've simplified, we continue to just remind people, we're like, hey, this thing's incredibly long, but it's also amazingly accurate. And as the launch monitors have kind of gained influence and importance, you're starting to see a lot of golfers be like, oh man, I just picked up a mile an hour of swings of ball speed. I'm really excited about that. Or I just got an extra yard and a half of total distance. And you're like, great, I'm glad you did that, but let's make sure that you're getting those gains without sacrificing something. And certainly you don't want to sacrifice accuracy when it comes to 917. And so we've really put a focus on both of those variables, because you want to be able to hit it really, really far, but at the same time, you want to be able to control it. Otherwise, you're just going to hit it really, really far into the woods, into the houses, or into the hazard. And
I know that shot well.
Yes. Unfortunately, we've all had a few of those. But because those exist, we want to get rid of those fall balls, if you will. We want you to be able to play something that we're really excited about. And so that pushed us into this space of really talking about 30 and 30. And for us, 30 and 30 is this fitting methodology we developed, which is 30 minutes, 30 swings, one superior driver. And we believe this will help get a lot of, not only help teach some of our fitters how to be really effective in a 30-minute setting, but also to really make sure we're focused on the golfer. Because when we've all the testing and history we've done of fitting, what we've realized is a lot of golfers get tired. They start to fatigue after about 30 swings with a driver. And when that happens, you're not making a consistent swing anymore. You're not actually helping the fitter make you better, because you're kind of off your game. So with that being almost the pitch count, we wanted to develop a methodology that would make sure we can get the most out of your game. And so we've really been focusing now, as we've gotten into the springtime, on this 30 and 30 fitting methodology and making sure we get clubs in as many golfers' hands as possible.
It's funny when I hear 30 and 30, and we've done a great THP TV segment from the PGA show on that, I immediately think there's going to be a documentary coming, but I know that's not the case.
Well, I would love it if it would be the case. I did. We do get the question occasionally, and we did check to make sure from a trademark perspective we weren't doing anything to infringe in that space.
I knew you guys wouldn't have it any other way.
Just in case your viewers are worried that we might have done that, we're in good shape.
It's time for Fire Away.
We don't need any call-ins about rules and fractions.
Well, you can't have that. It's time for Fire Away. 10 topics. First thing that comes to your mind, nothing to do with golf. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yes.
Best sandwich and from where?
Oh, man. I love sandwiches. I'm going to go my best sandwich – I have visited this place a few times called the Sandwich Spot in Palm Springs. And they have what is kind of like a Thanksgiving on a bun type sandwich that I absolutely love.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
And you get a little bit of everything, right? You get the carved roast turkey, a little bit of stuffing. That's really pretty spectacular. And then when I travel, so in case people are going, you know, want to actually hit up one of these places, I travel quite a bit and I connect through the Minneapolis airport frequently, especially for Midwest trips. And the Midwest airport has my favorite restaurant of all time in an airport called Ike's, I-K-E apostrophe.
Ike's is really good, actually.
Spectacular. And Ike's has got a Carver Club, which is fantastic. And I generally take pictures of it and send to my friends while eating it.
Of course. Now, you're a SoCal guy, but I know, and as you mentioned to our listeners, you're from the Minnesota area. What is the one thing you miss most about the Midwest?
Oh, I probably miss water skiing the most. I grew up, everybody in Minnesota gets out on the water all the time, as frequently as they can be. And it's such a great outdoor kind of focused.
But the water's normally
culture.
Frozen.
The water is frozen, not year round. But in the summer, people take advantage of the long, you know, beautiful days you get in the summer, and you can get it all in. So you could, I remember living even in Minneapolis, I would tee off early in the morning, get 18 holes in. You could tee off as early as 5:15, pay on your way leaving the golf course, go to work, be there by 8:15, leave the office at 5:30, get another round in, full 18, and go home before the sun would set. And those are pretty special days. But I'm still able to play quite a bit of golf here. But growing up and being on the water and skiing a lot with my friends, I miss that probably the most about Minnesota.
Now, those listening may not know this. You went to Concordia and to Notre Dame. Which is a better campus?
Oh, gosh.
And you're going to get some angry emails about this one, I have a feeling.
They're very different. The Notre Dame campus, if you've ever seen the movie Rudy, lives up to its billing. It is beautiful. It's incredible. It's kind of the gothic nature of it. They're both similar in the regards of their closed campus. You can't drive through them, and they also make sure that they have their own kind of brick, so that all the buildings look very similar, which I think is really helpful to make it feel like, hey, this is a unified, designed campus. So they're both beautiful in their own right.
I was going to say it makes it look dirty, but yeah, we'll go with unified design.
Well, it's kind of a gold brick at Concordia, kind of a yellowish color, and then in Notre Dame, very kind of your classic grays. But I think Notre Dame has got a few more pops than Concordia does. You've got a couple lakes on campus. You have the unbelievable, you know, Golden Dome shining down on you. All the athletic stadiums are right on campus, and so it's a pretty special place. They're both great. But if I was going to be 100% honest, I would pick Notre Dame.
Better food, SoCal or Minneapolis?
Whew, different, very different food. I mean, Minneapolis, you've got very hearty, and that's what I grew up with. A lot of kind of meat and potatoes.
You can't go politically correct on us here.
So I love the heartiness of Minnesota, but Southern California, you spend a little bit of time here, and you start to realize the amazingness of, you know, fresh fish all the time and kind of, you know, street taco culture. It's pretty tough to beat. So Southern California might have that one.
I don't know. I think that's a wrong answer. Last movie seen in a theater.
Growing up in Minnesota, I love it. A lot of food on the stick. You know, if you go back to the Minnesota State Fair, opportunity to try to, you know, sample just about anything that's cooked on a stick. Deep fried Oreo
and
corn dogs. There's some real treasures there. But it might be a little bit more progressive here in Southern California, and certainly probably healthier. So my doctors appreciate my dietary choices here.
Last movie seen in a theater.
this was kind of. I have a 3-year-old son, and we went and saw the Lego Batman movie about a month ago or whenever it came out. That was the last one we saw, and it was good. I would recommend it to dads out there. There was enough humor in there for me, and the kind of throwback to some of the earlier Batman characters, and my son thought it was great. And anytime he can sit still for over 90 minutes is a huge win for everybody.
You're flying back from the PGA show, and you have a choice of two seats. One, the back of the plane, middle row, but you get Wi-Fi. The second, nearly the front of the plane, aisle seat, but no Wi-Fi for that 5.5 hours. What do you choose?
Oh, I take space. I always take space. I can find things to do in 5.5 hours. Hopefully there's a way to watch, you know, some movies, even read a little bit. After the PGA show, get a little bit of sleep, get kind of caught up on that. I will take the space all day long. As a guy who's, you know, 6'2", 190 some pounds, I need, I'll take the space up front.
You are building the perfect burger for a restaurant. You're going to call it the Talgy. What is on it?
Oh man, I would go grass-fed beef, probably Wagyu burger, kind of do that. And I go medium rare. There would be no changing of that. That's just how you're going to enjoy it. I would make sure that we go with Gruyere cheese, maybe a little bit of arugula on there, some fried onions, hopefully Vidalia onions, a little bit of mushrooms, and then a sunny side egg, and then a nice Kaiser bun.
That's actually that may go into the THP Radio Hall of Fame. That's a pretty good burger. We've been on a roll of really bad ones, so that's a good one.
Well, I'm a big burger guy, and as soon as you brought it up, that was a great question. I was like, oh man, I started getting hungry as I was just thinking about it. I was like, I haven't had a good burger in a while.
Best travel city for food that is not in Minnesota or California.
Best travel city for food. Wow, there's some good places. I'm gonna go Chicago.
That's a good one.
Chicago occasionally, and you've got everything from kind of the easy in and out like Portillo's all the way up to, you know, finer dining. You've got good, I guess it kind of goes back to my Midwest roots, but you've got a lot of really fun stuff there that are kind of steak based. And even a really good, you know, kind of ethnic foods that arise. So I'm going to go Chicago for a travel city for good food. It's got a little bit of everything for everyone.
Give us one hobby you have that people outside of golf may not know you're into.
Well, we talked about water skiing, so that one's out. I've got a couple little kids. I don't have a ton of free time, but I spend a lot of my time trying to make sure that my kids grow up as fans of the Minnesota sporting teams. So I want to make sure that they know the Minnesota Twins and the Vikings are kind of their teams that they have to default to. Try to keep the T-Wolves on when I can. And so I'm constantly trying to figure out subconsciously how I can make that always pop at our house. And so my wife laughs about that I'm always tuning that on whenever she steps out of the room to try to get my kids excited about it. So that's kind of my hobby, is to try to make sure that my kids grow up to be ardent Minnesota fans, even growing up here in Southern California.
That's a great segue into the final question. Better event for you, your guy, in quotes, wins the Masters or the Twins win it all?
Oh, man. Obviously, our guy winning it, any of our, you know, our top players, we've got so many great ones that are playing well right now. That has a meaningful effect sometimes on our business, and it makes us really excited. We get to know these guys on a personal level when you spend time with them. And so I will say that it adds to the Sunday rush. Like, it's always exciting when you're watching at home and you see guys, you know, that back down on Sunday is so exciting, especially at Augusta. And then when you know these people and you know what they've put into it and you've worked with them, you've done product testing with them, that makes it so exciting. But I look back on growing up in Minnesota, and the 1987 World Championship Minnesota Twins might be one of the highlights of my you know, young days. Looking back on that and just celebrating that as well as the 91, just an amazing team from Kirby Puckett and Tom Berdansky, Kent Hrbak, Greg Gagne, Steve Lombardozzi. This can go on for a long time, so I'll cut myself off.
I'm dating myself, but I was in high school playing baseball during that year.
Yeah, I love those guys, and so I would kill to see the Twins get back there. We've had a couple good runs in the early 2000s, early kind of late 2000s, and now we need to kind of get it re-energized here. There's some young guys that are playing pretty well. Hopefully, Snow and Buxton can lead us back to some glory land.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank Josh for coming on the show and talking to us. Don't forget to head over to iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to The Hacker's Paradise, or download the THP mobile app on your iOS device. It's completely free and will keep you up to date all the times. So for myself, and of course Josh, we hope you enjoyed the show. Bye, everybody.
THP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.